Now we have the book review, and this month it's Journey to the Centre of the Earth. Please note the version that Debbie and I listened to was narrated by Tim Curry. The excerpts used in this item are from the Calibre supplied audiobook, which is narrated by David King. Jules Gabriel Verne was born in Nantes, France in 1828. During his youth, he was deeply interested in travel and sailing, and at the age of just 12, tried to flee home and join a ship bound for the West Indies. Although his family wanted him to be a lawyer, Verne was only really interested in writing. When his father paid for him to go to Paris in 1848, ostensibly to study law, the 20-year-old spent all his time trying to sell his manuscripts and plays. Upon visiting him and discovering how his son was spending his time, Verne's father was horrified and cancelled his allowance. Undeterred, Verne continued trying to interest people in his work. He met the world-famous authors Victor Hugo and Alexandre Dumas, who aided him with techniques and advice. Short on funds, Verne began having to write in the public library because it was free and relatively warm. He read widely on sciences and technology, taking hundreds of notes, and managed to start selling the occasional article. Gradually, Verne developed a relationship with Pierre-Jules Herzl, one of the most important publishers of the 19th century, who helped him edit his work and eventually published his first work, 5 Weeks in a Balloon, in 1863. This was a watershed moment for Verne, who over the next decade produced all his major works: Journey to the Centre of the Earth, 1864, From the Earth to the Moon, 1865, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, 1869, and Around the World in 80 Days, 1872. Most of his stories were serialised in the magazine Education et Recreation, a Herzl biweekly, before being published in the form of books. Verne is especially notable for having written about space, air and underwater travel before any of these things had been properly invented. Despite suffering from something of a literary identity crisis, in that some quarters he is still seen, to his fans' dismay, exclusively as a children's author, Verne's work remains immensely popular. To date, he is the second most translated author in the world and is considered, along with H.G. Wells and others, as one of the masters of early science fiction. So Debbie and I are back in the studio, and we've given ourselves a bit of a challenge this week.
We have.
That we would review a science fiction book.
Yes, being a bit outside of our comfort zones for a change. Yes.
Very much outside our comfort zone. I'm not a science fiction fan.
Yeah, what I would say is I generally am not into science fiction, but there are a few science fiction books, stories, films that I really like. They have to work very hard to please me. I'm not particularly into aliens. Time travel, I'm okay with.
Yes, I agree. Like Time Traveller's Wife was a good one, which is about time travelling, but essentially was a romance story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I generally struggle, and it wouldn't be my first choice.
And why is that? Because for me, I find it hard to suspend my disbelief.
There's that. And sometimes science fiction does go off on a tangent and it becomes quite, in my mind, ridiculous. I don't know. Anyway, we have. We have both reviewed, and we have reviewed the same book this month.
Yes. Good. Well done us.
Well done us. And it is Journey to the Centre of the Earth by Jules Verne. And I was pleasantly surprised by it. I was thinking I'm not going to like this. And the first chapter or so I struggled with, because I felt there was a lot of technical terms in terms of geology, and it's quite scientific.
Yes, and packed with that.
And I have to say, geology and geography were my worst subjects at school. So at first I thought, I'd hope it's not going to be like this the whole way through.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. And it did develop, characters developed, and the story began to kick off. And I thought, I'm quite enjoying this. What were your thoughts on it?
For me, it trundled along quite nicely. I never fully engaged with it. Like you, I was never really into geography. I found it hard, Marley, to find points of identification throughout. There's a bit of a love story, but it's not very focused, is it?
No, it's a very weak story, yeah. And it's almost a sort of, not even a B plot, it's a sort of C subplot.
It's just like, it feels like it's there to tick a box. I don't know if this is a problem or not, but there aren't really any women in the book.
No.
Now, I love Dad's Army. I live only with men, and I include the cats there. I'm not a girly girl, but I did find it in some ways a little alienating.
Yes, there's one female character who's called Groyben, and she is the love interest of Axel, who's Professor's nephew. Yes, but she plays a very small part in it. She's almost non-existent. She appears at the beginning, at the end of the book, really, and that's about it, isn't it?
I mean, this is an adventure story,
isn't it?
And I do love an adventure story. Grew up on the Famous Five, that sort of thing. So I suppose that was how I got through it.
Mm.
And, of course, I was listening to it, as our listeners would do. And I don't know how our listeners find this, but if a book doesn't hold my attention fully, because I'm always listening while I'm doing something else, walking or cooking, my mind will wander more easily than if I was sitting there reading it from the page, I think.
I think that is sometimes the danger with an audiobook, isn't it? Because you can get distracted. And I think at certain points the book must have got distracted and suddenly came back to it and thought, oh, what's happened? But yeah, I mean, if you're really engrossed in the book, of course, that would happen less.
Yes. And I think a lot of people would be. I mean, it's a very well-written book. This book is not as good as Round the World in 80 Days. And I think that's because the characters in Journey to the Centre of the Earth aren't as well defined. They aren't as warm. You don't feel that sense of the adventure in Around the World in 80 Days is, of course, he's only got 80 days to do his job. So you feel really invested in not only his adventure, but the idea that he's going to finish it within that time.
Yeah.
And I just found 80 Days more varied, more engaging, more focused. I think this book lacks a little focus. But I did enjoy it. I'd give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I think maybe he was still working on his craft at this point, because it is one of the earlier books. And again, I felt that the characters were reasonably well drawn, although I did think the relationship between the professor and his nephew was a role reversal between them, because usually the younger, more strident, more sort of adventurous type would be the person you'd expect to be going on an adventure.
And the
elderly, more sort of sage, mature man would be the one who was saying, oh, be careful, and exerting more caution. But in this book, it's the professor who was very gung-ho and wants to, we're going to the centre of the earth, and then, what's the problem with that? There's no issues there. And Axel, his nephew, is really quite worried and scared.
He's cautious, yes, but the uncle is the mad professor. But that's a good point.
And here's an excerpt from the book where we hear a conversation between Professor Lidenbrook and Axel.
All right, I said. I have to admit that Saknussemm's sentence is quite clear and leaves no room for doubt. I'll even grant that the document seems perfectly genuine. The old Savile went to the bottom of Sneffels. He saw the shadow of Scartaris touch the edge of the crater before the calends of July. He even heard tell in the legendary stories of his day that that crater led to the centre of the earth. But as for his having gone down there and come back alive, no. 100 times no. And why not? Asked my uncle in an extremely sarcastic voice. Because all the theories of science prove that a feat of that sort is impossible. Oh, so all the theories prove that, do they? What wicked theories they are, and what a nuisance they are going to be. I saw that he was making fun of me, but I went on all the same. Yes, it is generally recognized that the temperature rises about 1 degree for every 70 feet below the surface. So, that if you admit that ratio to be constant, the radius of the Earth being over 4,000 miles, the temperature at the centre must be over 2 million degrees. Consequently, all the substances inside the Earth must be in a state of incandescent gas. The gold, platinum, and even the hardest rocks cannot resist such a temperature. I therefore have good grounds for asking how it would be possible to penetrate so far. So it's the temperature that worries you, Axel. Well, of course it is. If we were to go only 25 miles down, we should have reached the limit of the Earth's crust, but the temperature there is over 1,300 degrees. And you are afraid of melting away? I leave you to answer that question. I retorted rather crossly. "This is my answer," said Professor Lidenbrock, taking on his most superior air. "Neither you nor anybody else knows for certain what is going on inside the earth, seeing that we have penetrated only about 1/12,000th part of its radius. What is more, science is eminently perfectible, and each new theory is soon disproved by a newer one. Wasn't it generally believed until Fourier that the temperature of interplanetary space steadily decreased? And don't we know now that the lowest temperature in the ethereal regions is never below 40 or 50 degrees below zero? Why shouldn't the same be true of the internal temperature? Why, at a certain depth, shouldn't it reach an impassable limit, instead of rising to the melting point of the most resistant minerals?" As my uncle was now putting the question on a hypothetical plane, I had nothing to say in reply.
Well, so I thought this role reversal there, but then they were quite archetypal characters, and you didn't really get to know them too much, did you? There wasn't any sort of depth to them, I felt.
Yeah, I agree.
The characters were established in the beginning, and they didn't really vary throughout the book.
No, they didn't change. And, you know, as a writer, this is something that we're encouraged to think about all the time. Our characters have to go on a journey. Now, they literally went on a journey, but not in terms of their own development, not really.
No, I think Axel may be slightly changed by the end of it.
Slightly, slightly, but not...
Not to any noticeable degree. I think you're right in that. And they do go on a very physical journey.
Yeah.
There are some amazing descriptions of Jules Verne imagines it's like in the centre of the earth.
Yeah.
And there's huge creatures and there's giant mushrooms and all sorts of extraordinary things. Let's just pause here and listen to an excerpt from the book.
But at this moment, my attention was drawn by an unexpected sight. 500 yards away, at the end of a steep promontory, a tall, dense forest appeared. It consisted of trees of medium height, shaped like parasols with sharp geometrical outlines. The wind seemed to have no effect on their foliage, and in the midst of the gusts they remained motionless, like a group of petrified cedars. I quickened my step, anxious to put a name to these strange objects. Were they outside the 200,000 species of vegetables already known? And had they to be accorded a special place among the lacustrian flora? No, when we arrived under their shade, my surprise turned to admiration. I found myself, in fact, confronted with products of the earth, but on a gigantic scale. My uncle promptly called them by their name. "It's just a forest of mushrooms," he said. And he was right. It may be imagined how big these plants, which love heat and moisture, had grown. I knew that the Lycopodon giganteum, according to Bouillard, attains a circumference of 8 or 9 feet, but here there were white mushrooms 30 or 40 feet high, with heads of an equal diameter. There were thousands of them. The light could not manage to penetrate between them, and complete darkness reigned between those domes, crowded together as closely as the round roofs of an African city. Yet I wanted to go farther, though it was mortally cold under those fleshy vaults. For half an hour we wandered about those damp shadows, and it was with a genuine feeling of relief that I regained the seashore.
Do you think it was a book of its time? Because that sort of explanation wouldn't have been known about then. Obviously now we are much more scientifically aware and we know a lot more about
geology. When was it written?
1864.
Okay.
So at that time, if you were reading it, you would have probably think, wow, this is fantastic.
Yes, yes.
So I think maybe it's a book that suffered slightly from age and from us knowing so much more about the world and the Earth's core and the fact that that journey is almost completely impossible.
Yeah, you're right. And I'm just trying to think of other books that written in that period that would have been...
Well, H.G. Wells obviously was around that, but he was writing in the same sort of ilk, and certainly science fiction.
Yeah, I quite like H.G. Wells. I find his books a little bit more hard-hitting.
Maybe it's the character development and that you get involved with the characters more.
Maybe. And also Jules Verne was French. Was it translated from the French? I don't know.
It's translated from the French.
Right,
yes,
so we might have lost...
Yes.
Something in translation.
Yeah.
I think translations can be a bit iffy, can't they, sometimes?
Yes, absolutely. And when you listen to a translation, there's always going to be some loss of meaning. I don't know if it was that. I mean, I think, yeah, it may be of its time. It may be that you and I are not particularly keen on science fiction books.
But it's interesting to think about it in terms of the development of science fiction. This really is a scientific book, whereas science fiction now is a bit more thinking about how things could theoretically be.
A lot of AI-based science fiction as well, AI taking over the world, and which is actually probably a possibility now. Would I read another Jules Verne book? Maybe. You've recommended Around the World in 80 Days.
Yeah. And are you glad? Because I'm glad I've read it.
Yes.
Are you?
Yes, definitely glad I read it. I'm glad we pushed ourselves out of our comfort zone, because there are many, many fans of science fiction, and I think it's unfair of us not to ever go there. So, yes, I'm glad I read it. And I did enjoy it, despite myself. I did enjoy it. It was a little too technical for me, and I, like you say, I didn't feel particularly involved in the characters. Mm. And some of the things just sounded a little bit ludicrous, to be honest.
Yeah.
I won't give away the ending. The ending is particularly ludicrous. but again, for those who are fans of science fiction, then it's one of the most well-known science fiction books, isn't it? It's very well-known.
Yes.
Yeah. So, what are we going to say in terms of reasons to listen? Or,
well, I mean, the main reason for me is if you can listen to the version read by Tim Curry.
I had Tim Curry version too.
What? And his voice is amazing.
Yes.
I've liked him since I was a child. So that, it is one of the best in terms of like the personification of each character and the general narration. It is one of the best audiobooks I've listened to. So I would recommend it for that. I'd also say, obviously, if you like science fiction and are interested in the development of it as a genre, this is a really interesting one to read.
I totally agree about Tim Curry. He brought it to life.
Yeah.
So, yes, so I agree with you. It's a great narration. So that's a good reason for getting it, and just to listen to the narration. If you're a science fiction fan, it's one of the classics. I think you can't not like science fiction without reading some of Jules Verne or H.G. Wells, because they were the fathers of it. Thirdly, I think it's sometimes good to push yourself out of your comfort
zone. You're absolutely right.
And, you know, listen to or read a book that you wouldn't normally pick up.
Yeah.
Hasn't necessarily happened in this particular case, but in other cases when I picked up a book and I haven't particularly thought I wasn't going to like it, and I've actually really enjoyed it. Yeah, if anything, we recommend push yourself out of your comfort zone.
Absolutely.
So, and if you're a science fiction fan, maybe, but you know, listen to a book that's not science fiction, or vice versa.
Yeah, yeah.
Always good to challenge yourself in some way.
Yes, it is. It is.
Great. Thank you, Debbie.
Not at all. Thank you.